7654321.
You'll never have the sacred stone.
Oh, this you crazy mother.
Welcome, friends, to episode 18 of Color of Magic. I am your host, Daquan Watson, and as usual, I have my main man, Brian Allen, with me. How are you doing today, dude?
Doing good. 18. This podcast can drink now.
As long as you're not in the United States, I think that's how that works.
Okay.
So yeah, well, I want to say welcome to everybody. This has actually been an interesting week because it's almost like we're doing a catch-up week. So we're going to be doing some updates on things we have going around that maybe people may have missed, talking about a couple things that are upcoming, and then just getting into some interesting dinner table talks. So it's going to be more of a laid-back episode than normal because we actually got a breather in the magic news a little bit.
That's right. Take a little breath, everybody. 15 things did not get banned this week. So
yeah, that's true. None actually got banned, which is cool. So the only thing I would say that's different, I saw that there was a video that actually just went out earlier today from, it looked like one of the developers at Wizards, and I guess with whatever the parent company is that's working on the, what do we call on that? Like the Magic MMO thing. So like, I hadn't seen that yet. That's up there.
Yeah, is it Magic Legends, I believe?
Yeah, that's it. And then some people have been playing some Legends of Runeterra, myself included. I checked that out since it opened up to open beta, so that's been cool.
I wasn't cool enough to get into the first beta, but they went and let me into this one, so. Next time.
Yeah, I think we can cover a little bit on that, depending on if people want to hear about that or not, what's going on with it. I think we have some slightly differing opinions on how excited we are about the game, but overall, I think the product's still pretty good. Yeah, because I know you liked it. You had posted on Twitter that you were more high on it than I was.
I did. I'm really a huge fan, of course. I think also it benefits, you know, from the fact that Artifact tried this and crashed and burned. So almost anything else would look like the best digital card game ever in comparison.
Yeah, sort of. But here's the thing, though, right? That I will give Riot credit where Steam kind of messed up was that, I guess, with their license, with the League of Legends stuff, like you now you have League of Legends, you have Teamfight Tactics, and you have Legends of Runeterra, all using similar characters, same world, but completely different games. Whereas Artifact tried to take this whole idea of like a MOBA and then mix it with a collectible card game, but still have all of the elements of a MOBA while trying to keep all the elements of a card game and make it work. And like, that just doesn't make a quality viewing product.
Even for people that have done, you know, lane-based card games, I can think of probably four of those that did it better than the way Artifact ended up doing it.
Yeah, I literally told people, like, I watched a walkthrough of it, I read through the rules of it, and then people came like, so what do you think? And I literally said, it's not going to last. Like, just knowing what I know about the industry, knowing what customers like, knowing how people respond to stuff visually, like, it just didn't have a shot at it. And then, you know, they had their balance issues, and then they had people paying for cards that ended up getting...
And it wasn't free.
Yeah, they had cards that got nerfed or whatever after people already paid, like, $40 or $50 for some of the cards. It just... They were trying to run their whole secondary market on top of it. It was like, it was a mess. So that's a whole different thing.
Just digital card games got to be free to play now. That's just where the market is.
I think so. If it's online, that's probably true.
Because all of your competitors, you get Hearthstone's free, Legends is free, Magic is free. I need a compelling argument for me to give you $20 when all these other games are free. And they didn't have one.
You know, I think the thing is, though, if you do it in a way how Arena does it, where it's like, okay, give us $5, we give you all these cards and other stuff to get started. You know, if you give us this $15 at the beginning of a season, and it opens up the ability for you to get all these other packs and gold and gems and whatever, like, that's okay. But I think if it's just, you have to have this to play the game, to even get started, go through the tutorial, all that mess, then like, it's probably not going to get too far.
And I felt like I put probably 30 hours into Artifact and still didn't feel like I had a competitive deck.
Well, you put more time in than I did. I just considered it DOA and just didn't touch it.
Yeah. I'm old school where if I give you $20, I'm going to play until I feel like I've got my $20 worth, even if I'm not enjoying it anymore.
I feel you. So I want to give everybody a reminder as well that we're, by the time you listen to this, I think we'll be right around 2 months away from the Hunter Burton Memorial Open, which is cool. So if you have not been to this event, I would recommend, if you're able to make it, it's going to be in Texas, so in the DFW area. So if you have an opportunity, definitely check this event out. It is by far many people's, who at least of people who've attended, almost everybody says this is their favorite event of the year. And the reason is, well, one, it's the cause, right? They raise money every year. They pick a cause that's in the suicide prevention or suicide awareness space to donate to, which obviously is something everybody can get behind. But I think more importantly is the people who show up to participate. It doesn't, even though the prizes are big, I mean, they have a $10,000 tournament, they have a $5,000 tournament, they have a bunch of side events that have prizes, you know, nothing feels cutthroat. Like if you walk around, people are introducing themselves to each other, they're sharing stories, everybody's really friendly, they're going out to, you know, get together for like local dinner and stuff. It's just a different feeling event. And we've had people like big name, you know, the guys from the Arena Decklist podcast come out to that event and they love it. Like they've even said they would cancel other things to be at the event, you know, and I got to participate and I loved it. I mean, I'll be back this year. I'll be doing commentary for them. You know, because people, apparently, I don't know why, but y'all all seem to like listening to me.
And thank goodness if they do. That's
extremely helpful. I appreciate it. And it's great for me because I like to talk, so it's all right.
I hadn't heard.
I would go check out the website. It is HunterBurtonMemorialOpen.com. HunterBurton MemorialOpen.com. And if nothing else, even if you can't be there, they will have a donation link set up on the site. You can just donate stuff to them. Also, if you have a company or products or games or whatever that you would like to donate, they do take donations because they do a silent auction that runs over the 2 or 3 days and they give stuff away. That way, they have some stuff that they give away to volunteers and stuff that help them. So any amount of anything that you can donate is awesome. And I will say, they actually get real support for this too. Like the sponsors last year, I know included like Wizards of the Coast, Ultra Pro, Legion Supplies donated stuff. I think the Akon convention, the anime convention down there,
yeah.
Like, which is like one of the three or four largest in the country. Like they donated to it. Panini that makes the sports cards. They had some stuff in the charity auctions. Yeah, there's all kinds of things. And it's awesome because though Magic's kind of the core thing, there are people from all over. And this year, I can't talk about it yet because they're still confirming, which they should know next week, I think. But there's going to be some other stuff there as well that's non-Magic. So they're going to be trying to bring even more people in. So just a little PSA. I'll definitely be mentioning it again as we lead up to the event. But such a good cause. A very well-run event. I think we're also going to try to have one of the organizers on the show so he can talk about it a little bit too. Excellent. Here in a couple of weeks.
It's what to echo everything Daquan said. It's going to be my first one, but I mean, I've heard just that it really is kind of a different feeling. Just, you know, I'm looking forward to this almost like Christmas, even more so than Christmas. Cause I don't have to buy my kids things for this. So.
And I want to say this too. One of the things, and I think we've touched on it lightly before, but you know, I think it merits being said again, is that we don't talk enough about mental health, depression issues, or whatever, especially for Black men within the Black community, for sure.
We're not allowed to have depression, Daquan.
Yeah, depending on who you talk to.
Yeah, I've been told, you know, by multiple family members, that's a white people problem. We can't afford it. We don't have time.
Yeah, so being able to support this type of cause that is making that a bigger point of conversation and donating to those charities, I am all on board for it, because it's definitely something that we need to be talking about and addressing for sure. On a lighter note, what did we learn last week? Because
I think we're both have decided to go in on the same topic because it warrants it.
So I guess this was Tuesday, maybe, on Twitter. There was a post from, I guess it was Ross over on Friends, who decided to post that he believes Hollywood should do an all-Black or all-Asian version of Friends. Now, this was shared with me, and my first thought was, wait, wasn't Friends like the white version of Living Single?
I think all of Black Twitter had the exact same reaction you did.
Yeah, and that's why I was so confused. And so I like had to go check the timeline because, like, well, maybe I just have it wrong in my head on which one. But I was like, nope, Living Single was definitely out before Friends.
You did not.
Yeah. And it was just like a weird thing, right? Because and I don't know if he knew about it or not, or, you know, it was just kind of an out of the blue statement.
I'm going to have to assume he didn't know, because he would have to. If you knew, surely you wouldn't say anything that tough, I would like to think, you know?
Yeah, I would think so. You know, maybe he just didn't know.
I have to believe he didn't know, which I can kind of believe, because right when these shows were popular and Martin was popular, they did a survey of the top 15 shows for white people and the top 15 shows for Black people. The only show that appeared on both lists was The Simpsons.
I believe that, especially around that time frame.
Yeah.
I'm saying, I don't think what he said at its core is wrong. I mean, I feel like he made the statement in all sincerity from a positive place. Like, he looked around and said, yeah, Friends was very white-centric. Like, we should do something similar for some other culture.
And he said he really pushed for the inclusion of Black actors. It's just none of them really stayed around for very long in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah, I just felt a little bad that he was getting so much like heat for it when I don't think he meant it the way it came off.
He was trying to say, I don't see color or some form of it. His heart was in the right place.
And that's what I'm saying. Like, I think maybe he was just like, you know, it got brought up and he went, yeah, why isn't there one for like Black people? Why isn't there one for Asians? Like, we obviously had a bunch of white people on Friends. You know, and then people were like, wait a minute.
So I want to believe he really didn't know, and also didn't know that apparently it's on record that somebody asked NBC's president, what if he could have one show from another network, what would it be? And he said Fox is Living Single. A year and a half later, Friends shows up.
Yeah, and I think that's one of those things too, where it can be easy to want to jump on somebody for something like that. But to my knowledge, he doesn't, and feel free, you know, to shoot me comments or whatever over on Twitter if I'm wrong, but I didn't see anything from him that said he had a history of some type of weird racial shenanigans. Like, this is just, that's what I'm saying. Like, I feel like he's kind of been on the right side of discussions. This is just something that came out wrong, and it was kind of amusing to watch people overreact to it.
It was definitely wild. I didn't realize how big, I knew the two shows similar. I just found out about the interview where the NBC president, and that's, you know, definition of white privilege, where guys can tell you, man, I really love that show, and then goes, wait, I run NBC. I could absolutely do the same show, promote it better, because it's not just NBC's success. It was Fox's failure to promote Living Single properly.
That's fair.
Fox never pushed Living Single as hard as NBC pushed Friends.
Yeah.
There was a time period where even if you didn't, because I was not a big Friends fan, I don't think I've seen all of an entire episode ever, but you couldn't avoid it. It was everywhere in the 90s.
But, you know, I think that's the other thing, too, that I learned from reading some of these threads, is that when you have a show where so much of the cast is of one demographic, you kind of just exclude other demographics from wanting to participate. Because there were several people who were Black or non-white, really, that it said like, oh yeah, I'd seen a couple episodes of Friends, and there were white people like, oh man, this Living Single show looks sweet. I'd never even seen it before.
Yeah.
And Living Single, I mean, it felt like it was on TV forever. I don't know, probably six seasons or something.
I believe five seasons in total.
Yeah, but like they just never heard of it.
And with most shows, you know, in that final season, it's already, you know, it's because it's the ratings are, I think toward the end, it was ranked like 85th or 90th, and that's not going to keep you on the air.
Oh, yeah, not at that point. No, but hell, you had all kinds of names in that show in hindsight.
Oh, yeah.
Hell, wasn't Queen Latifah? Yeah, she was hanging out on that show.
Because they're talking about, you know, they asked Yvette Bowser if she wanted to do a Living Single reboot, and she's, I'd love to, but everybody's working, you know?
Yeah, that's exactly it. They've all gone on to do other things. So yeah, one thing I wanted to touch on, actually, before we get to some of our reminders, is Standard's really damn cool right now. I was looking at what little tournament coverage we do have. Aether, for those who don't know, Aether Hub sponsored a tournament where they gave away, it was a free tournament, and they gave away, I think, some gems and some different codes and stuff for people that participated. They did some release day tournaments online. I think they did four of them. I think it was 2 in the morning. Two events, not at 2 in the morning. But they did a morning and an evening event, I think, on Friday, and a morning and an evening event on Saturday, I think is how they did it. But the results there were pretty diverse, which was cool. And then there were a couple of Magic Online results that came in, and those were pretty diverse. But, I mean, you have Blue-White Control, you've got Mono Red, you've still got Rakdos still being a thing. You know, occasionally you'll still see Fires of Invention decks. I mean, there's just all kinds of stuff being played. You know, Green-White Enchantments is a thing. I even posted...
That's where we hopefully want to be, is that everything is getting
played. I played on stream, and I'm actually, after this, I will be loading a video onto YouTube of me playing the deck as well. But I built a mono-green deck, and I was like, all right, I'm a little bit outside of Mythic. I don't know if I'm actually going to make it this season, so let me just do something fun for everybody on stream. So built a mono-green deck, and I'll be damned if I didn't go 5-2 with it that night.
Okay.
So... Theros has made a lot of things viable that just weren't before.
Just out of curiosity, how long would you say it takes you to hit Mythic when you do hit Mythic? How many hours are we talking?
It depends, right? Because if you already make Mythic, you only drop down to Platinum. Yeah. So you only have to redo Platinum and Diamond to get back into Mythic. And if you play a deck, let's say you're doing well because you kind of get out in front of everybody on a new set release. So you have like a 65-70% win percentage. Like that might own
early access for some reason or something.
Exactly. That probably only takes you. I mean, people have done it in like 6 to 8 hours.
Okay.
I mean, it just really depends on how long you're on when you're playing, what you run into. You know, there's a few different things. Because you also have that other thing, too. Like, my issue is, I'm not so much playing just for Mythic. I'm also playing to kind of have fun with some of my viewers in the stream. Some of them, they have decks they want me to play or whatever. So what I'll do sometimes, I'll get into Diamond. And then once I'm at Diamond, I can't drop below Diamond 4. So I'll just goof around, play some different decks. So I might have 2 or 3 nights where I just don't go anywhere. I win a couple, lose a couple, win a couple, lose a couple. I'm still at Diamond 4 or Diamond 3 at the end of the night, right? Even though I spent 3 or 4 hours just then. But if I'm really trying, like last season, I just raced up to it. Matter of fact, I got to Mythic so early that I kind of had to make a decision on if I even wanted to play anymore to risk falling out of the position. Because at one point I hit 17th.
Absolutely a thing.
And I just put the brakes on. Yeah. And then I just had the stream help build a brawl deck. And then I just played that and did some other goofy stuff for a while.
I've seen a lot of pros in video games where they will just, they do their placement matches. If they're happy with their placement, that's the only time they play that season, unless there's a tournament or something.
I feel that. And I think that's the tough part, right? Because people do talk about, how do you have situations where you discourage people from playing? And it's difficult because I don't know that there's any way to prevent that from happening.
Yeah, because
there may be.
If you think about it, you know, when you talk about playing competitively, and if you're on a ladder, you're playing, you know, for competitive reasons. How long is the NBA Finals? 7 games. How long is the World Series? It's 7 games. How many games of, let's say, Magic or Overwatch might you play in a year? Infinity. At some point, you got to stop playing. You're not gaining anything. You know?
Yeah, but I think it's tough because if you go all the way back for Magic, when they used to use the old ELO system, you would get in these situations where if you were rated high enough, and actually this happened to me actually, like if I went to play an FNM on a Friday, I could go 5-0 in an FNM and only come out plus 3 points.
Yeah. And where's the,
but if I lost even once, I was going to end up minus 16.
Yep. Cause everybody there is at a lower rank than what you are.
Yeah, so there were a lot of times some of the best players in the world were incentivized to not even participate in their local events, which isn't really what you want, you know? And then they had like the Planeswalker points thing, and that was okay. But even then, it's kind of like, well, once you reached a point threshold, you had the points you needed. There wasn't really an incentive to play anymore because you weren't gaining anything unless you just wanted to practice. That's the only reason you would play.
And if you've got new tech, you don't necessarily want to show it to everybody in the world.
Yeah, that's a consideration. And then now you have the Mythic ladder that if you get, let's say, above, because I think where I eventually cut it off last season, I was somewhere around, I want to say like 300 or 400 maybe. And then just decided, nah, there's only 3 days left to go. I let it sit for a day. I only dropped like 80 places or something. And I was like, that's fine. I'll gamble the last 2 days. And then ultimately I finished at like 800 or 900. So even not playing for 3 days with people scrambling toward the end, I only lost like 400 in some places. So I wasn't incentivized at all to play anymore because there's no reward for tagging the number one spot, right? You get the same thing, whether you're at 1 or 1200. Like, you get the same rewards, which is fine. I'm not saying that should be different. But, like, once you've safely secured that 1,200 spot, I don't blame you for not playing. And it's not like you can't create other content, right? Like, I was still able to find other fun things to do. There's other games you can mess around with. Even if it was just, like, staying within the Magic space, I played other people's decks. Like I said, we built a Brawl deck and we did that. I went through a collection I bought or whatever. We just had different things going on just to fill that time. And that's okay.
That is, you know, the struggle content creators go through. Because I have I'm primarily running a Madden theme deck now on my stream. It's certainly not the best team I could make, but it's what I have the most fun with.
And that's part of it though, right?
My defense isn't that good. So all my games are in like 50 to 40, which is just more fun to watch and more fun to stream, really.
And I think that's part of it too, though, right? If you make that part of your personality and part of what you're trying to sell to people on your streams, then that makes perfect sense, right? I think if, like, here's an example, right? There's things I do that somebody like Ben Stark wouldn't do, right? Ben Stark is known for being one of, if not the best, limited players in the world of Magic. So people go watch Ben Stark to see the best strategy, hear him talk through plays, like get insights on drafts, ideas and concepts or whatever, right? The people who come watch me, like you're watching me come play kind of sometimes tier 2 decks and carry them to the top. You're watching to get history of the game because I'm telling all these stories from like behind the scenes that people may not know about.
One of my favorite
players. I'm telling dumb dad jokes. You know, like I'm doing all these other things and that's how I'm branding it. So I don't even have to make Mythic for my stream to still feel successful. But if I'm a competitive player, well, then if I don't make Mythic, that kind of harms my brand a little bit. So I think it really depends on what you're trying to sell to the public.
Like the other night, thank you, by the way, you rated me and one of your viewers that became one of my viewers mentioned, well, you know, Daquan has this dumb dad joke thing you can do with his channel points. Why do you not have that? And I'm just like, because I actually think I'm funny.
Yeah, but that's exactly like you are an actual comedian. I'm like just a bum imitation comedian. So like.
Like, of course, I had a conversation with a couple of comedians where they said, what's the first thing anybody says? You know, and they tell you, oh, tell me a joke. Okay, I don't do knock-knock jokes. There could be a 2 to 3 minute setup depending on which joke I'm going to tell you. How long would you like to stand here in this conversation?
You know, that's a weird thing. This is kind of a side panel now that you jumped on that. But, like, I don't know why people think that that's proper etiquette. Like, even when I had my store and people found out what I did, they're like, ooh, what's the best game right now? And I'm like, okay, we can have this conversation, but like, I don't know if I want to talk about work right now.
It's almost like our jobs are so fun. Most people don't look at them as because nobody's going to say, you know, I guess maybe if you're an accountant, they'll say, hey, especially this time of year, they'll ask you a tax question. But other than that, nobody cares that you're an accountant.
Yeah, it's just an interesting thing that I watch people do. Yeah, I just think it's funny. But yeah, there's things I think you can use the tools that are given to you. Like you're saying, somebody asked you about like the channel points thing. For those who don't know, this is fairly new. It's like maybe 3 or 4 months old. Because I want to say it was around Thanksgiving that the channel points became a thing.
Yeah, it's pretty new.
But what it is when you go into a channel on Twitch, watching somebody stream, the longer you're in the channel, you accumulate channel points. Now, each channel can, or each creator, I guess, can theme them to whatever they want. Mine, I've turned into gold coins because Power Dragon, and you get to collect dragon coins, and then you can cash the coins in for a thing. And there's some preset items, but you can create your own to theme to your channel. So in mine, you can cash stuff in for a bad joke, and then I have to tell like the equivalent of a dad joke or whatever. And you can also cash in to just ask me a personal question, and I have to answer it as honestly as possible. But I use it as a tool to engage with my community, like so they can find out more about me since I'm still a new streamer. I may change those up in the future. I'm also considering doing a thing where you can cash in, say, like 1,000 points to get an extra entry in my drawings that I do regularly on my channel to give stuff away. But there's somebody like Nessa, who we've had on the show, her channel, Nessa Meow Meow, where everything in hers is cat themed because that's her whole gimmick, right? So you can cash points in. I was in there one day in watching one of her streams where somebody cashed in points for a kitty rave. So she found, this is a true thing. She found this, I guess it's like an old Meow Mix commercial, but it's literally like these cats at a party. So there's like lights and there's the, right?
I want to see there's that the music. That's actually that's a good one.
Yeah, and then, you know, everybody uses their cat emotes or whatever while there's like the cat. There's a name for it. I can't remember what she calls it. But while the cat rave's going, everybody's putting their little cat emotes in or whatever. But she uses it as that's her point of engagement. And I think that's one of those things, right? You cultivate your brand, whatever it is. As long as you're being true to yourself, I think you can still have success in the streaming world. I think the problem is if you're coming on just trying to be just another competitive player or just offer a thing everybody else is, you're gonna have a hard time getting reach.
You know what is crazy about the channel points? I've been, you know, I've been a lazy streamer and really done nothing that you could even buy or update with mine. And I still have people come in and because they play Madden, they're trying to figure out how to farm the points because they're just used to grinding for cards and coins. And just, I want to see how many points I can get in an hour for no reason, just to see how they can do it because they're gamers.
Gamers gonna game, man.
Yeah. Just in case I ever offer some, they'll have already figured out how to farm the most points in 60 minutes. I love gamers. I really do.
Just for the record, you gain about 220 points per hour of channel points per stream that you're in.
And is that just regardless of anything else that you do? You can't, that's the cap?
Yep, it's a time-based thing, and they don't carry over from channel to channel. So points in my stream are completely independent of points in your stream.
But it was just mind-boggling to see if people were doing that just to see if they could game the system.
Yep, I have done my research, my friend.
Which, that is one of the most fun things in any game, card or video game, to see, you know, how you can exceed the limits. What do the best decks in Magic do? They break the rules some kind of way.
Yeah, usually.
you get 20 life. No, this deck gains like 30 a turn or something crazy.
Oh, it's funny you mentioned breaking the rules, because that brings me to my next reminder that we got to tell everybody about. Unsanctioned is going to be available at the end of February.
That's what we call a segue in the business, and we didn't plan it.
Yeah, folks. So February 28th is when it's going to be available. They did put up a cool video on the WPN page, which is, though it's four stores, it's technically available to everybody. And it shows the product a little bit, which is cool. So you kind of get a look at it and a glance and get to see what's going on. But what's cool is they have some really sweet lands in this product. I don't know if everybody's aware, but they are very, very cool. They look like a cross between almost, it's like somebody found a way to blend the different land styles from the previous unsets. And then they got a cool shimmer and like foil gold border around them when you get the gold, the foil ones. And they are really, really nice. Now, is it going to be a product I say everybody needs to chase or pick up? Not necessarily. I mean, the lands are really awesome and they'll probably sell for a bunch, especially the foil ones. But the product itself isn't going to be tournament legal. It's strictly just for fun. If you have a commander group that lets you play with, you know, the silver border cards, that's probably cool. But in general, not necessarily something I will probably be high on. I think I have, for me personally, I think I have so many different types of lands and or foil lands that I'm not going to worry about it. But it's cool. It's a pre-box product, so you're not actually like chasing down boosters and whatever, from what I understand. But let me see. Yeah, it's a ready-to-play box. Yeah. So it's pretty cool. It's pretty cool.
See, I feel the same way. It's like, I feel like I never actually physically play with it more than one time, you know, because it's not legal in anything. So I was wondering what if your experience was different. Or
I think for me, with the silver border sets, for me, it's a lot about the first blush joke, right? And the cards are funny, and I'm reading through the flavor text, and even all the way back to the first unset where, you know, you had cards you had to balance on your hand and, you know, all this other stuff. But like, after you've done it a couple times,
chaos, confetti. Yeah,
but if you've done it a couple times, the entertainment, yeah, the newness, the joke kind of wears off. Like all the weird quirky things you can do to work around a card's difficulty, you've kind of done already. So it's, but some people love that. I mean, it's, you know, it's like when somebody goes back and watches Monty Python or whatever, right? Like they still laugh at every single joke, every single time they see it. Yeah. I saw it once. It was kind of humorous.
I remember all the kids in my comic shop love, was it chaos confetti where you throw, where you rip the card up and throw these in the air or something?
Yeah. Yeah. That's exactly the one.
They all, for about 2 weeks, yeah, they all get the cool thing. Chaos confetti, son!
But yeah, but like I said, the foil lands inside the product are super sweet. I think people will love them. That alone could possibly help the product sell. So yeah. Credit to Wizards for understanding what gamers like. Because people...
We do like shiny things.
Yeah, people chase them down. So we'll see how it does. I think it'll be one of those things that'll probably sell through one run, and that's probably it. Won't see any reprints on the product. It's interesting, though, because it could be a product that down... Like, now that I'm thinking about it, I may have just talked myself into a purchase, actually. I think...
Wizards, well played. Well played, Power Dragon.
Yeah, no, I'm just thinking, like, it's possible. If I can get a deal on, say, like, two of these, I might get them and put them away in a closet for a while. Because I could see a situation where the lands in the box make it worth enough to sell it later on. Like, because this is going to be the only place they're available. It's not like you can get a bunch of boosters of it or whatever and hunt them down. Like, you either have the box product with the lands or you don't. So, yeah, I might get a couple and just put them away and then just see what happens.
I love how you were able to talk yourself into that over the course of just a minute or so.
Well, you know, gamer's going to game.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it's a cool product. I think it's neat for this type of stuff to exist, though, right? I think we get caught up sometimes. Definitely. In stuff being the best thing or being the most value or being for the most competitive player or whatever. And it's like, you know, this is still a sector of the community that will probably appreciate this. Following that, we have Ikoria, which will be out in April. The only reason I bring this up particularly is because it was announced this past week on one of the WPN streams that there will be Commander deck open dueling with this set. Normally when a set comes out, you get, you know, the deck builders toolkits, the boosters, the planeswalker decks, and whatever we call the fat packs now, the bundles. And some stores would do what they call open dueling, where if somebody didn't want to participate in an actual pre-release event, they could buy one of the planeswalker decks, they could sit down, crack them, play those, and, you know, win a booster or something. This time, because this set's going to also come with commander decks, they're actually going to be allowed to do commander deck open dueling. So, like, each store, I believe, is going to be given a limit of 40. So they'll be able to sell 40 total decks for that weekend. It sounds like there will be plenty available for them to sell on release. But for pre-release weekend, each store can get up to 40. And then people can play with those early that weekend, have their fun, whatever thing they want to do for small prizes. Obviously, the prizes for that aren't going to equal what you get playing in the pre-release. But if you just want to get a commander deck early and play, that'd be one thing you can do. So for those of you that are hardcore commander players, really looking forward to more commander decks and commander releases, be aware that there are some commander shenanigans for you to be had at pre-release now. But again, that's in April.
Yeah, this is the most commander cards they've put in the set. Is it ever? I think this is like 71.
Oh, no, that's going to be at the end of the year. Like, yeah, that's going to be commander specific set. For this one, it's still going to be a regular booster product, but it will have some extra commander cards in it. And then it's going to come with separate commander decks that also have Ikoria cards in them. So it's a really weird release, but I think it's Wizards. The 2020 is basically Wizards experimentation with how can we take care of the most players and within that commander players, because whether people want to admit it or not, like, commander is one of, if not the most played format of Magic currently.
Oh yeah. It's taking off like wildfire, which is fun to see.
Yeah. It's really, really, really neat. I think we mentioned last week about the pick your champion kind of worlds thing that they're doing, which, by the way, Worlds is not this weekend, but next weekend. So the weekend of the 13 and 14, I believe, is what that is. So a couple weeks away, actually. So I had that wrong. But
have you made your pick yet?
I did. I went
Do you care to share with the class?
Yeah, I went with Chris Kvartek. Partly because he's always, like, I feel like he's the type of guy who does his homework and then comes with a deck that's slightly off the beaten path. Not that it's like this weird tier 3 homebrew, but like, it's playing a bunch of good cards, but he just like found little things here or there that allow him to get a few edges. And he's finished strong in the last couple of events. He's one of the dudes who qualified originally through Arena. And, you know, really got to make his statement. And that just, like, whether he wins or not, I think it's just, like, I want to show support for somebody like that. So he got my vote.
Cool. Okay. So you're not, this isn't, you're necessarily, like, I guess, I don't want to say betting line, but this is in your, you didn't pick him because you necessarily think he's the 100% favorite. Just you, this is who you would like to see.
Yeah, it's a show of support. Like, but with the way he's been playing and his record this year, I mean, if he made top four, I wouldn't be surprised. The other cool thing, though, that comes with this, other than the promotion. Actually, before I move forward, did you make a pick yet?
I did not. I plan to cheat off of your homework.
Well, I didn't give you a lot to go on there. Yeah, so other than just picking your champion and all that, there is a cool promotion they're also doing to encourage more people to watch Worlds and really get people to go to the WPN stores that are doing the right things and supporting stuff. They're allowing WPN stores to host viewing parties for the World Championship. So the idea is these stores, because now you have a lot of stores who have like big screens where they're either like showing advertising roll or whatever else, right? Some of them do actually stream footage and do other things or show big events on their TVs. So Wizards is encouraging these stores to stream the World Championship, which is cool. Get more eyes on it. And one of the, and this is big too, because one of the things I've always tried to bring up to people, both inside and outside of Wizards, is one of the problems you have, and it's hard to get people to understand this, is that when they look online and say, well, how come the World Championship, or not even World Championship, it's like a Mythic Championship that's going on, doesn't get 200,000 viewers or whatever. But one of the things I try to explain to people is a lot of those people who could be potential viewers are actually physically out doing magic things on a Saturday. Like they're playing in a local cash tournament. They're going to a PTQ. They're, I don't know, playing a commander event or something, or they're actually at a Grand Prix or whatever it is, right? They're not just sitting there watching the thing online. Where,
yeah, some people play for their own entertainment. They don't care who the champion is. They have no desire to know about the level of
magic. Yeah, but even beyond that, right? You have, say, if you play Hearthstone or League of Legends or whatever, you only engage with that product on your computer.
Yeah.
If you are playing, it doesn't hurt you at all to just open another screen off to the side to have it up and watch it, or even just leave it running while you're playing your game. And then between games loading or whatever, you'll pop back over and watch some coverage.
Depending on how good your computer is, it does hurt you.
That's fair. But that's not necessarily the case with Magic. Like, so I think one of the ways Wizards is, and I don't know this part to be fact, this is me speculating here, it feels like one of the things Wizards is trying to do to at least help this situation is encourage more people to go to these stores for these viewing parties. And the cool part is the viewing parties, they are standard and they're going to be run like normal tournaments or whatever. But what's cool is it says for high finishes with most people or higher finishes, but I think there's enough that like the top 16 or so at each store are probably going to get them. I need to double check that, so don't quote me on it. But it's a cool Crucible of Worlds, which is already a good card. And it has new kind of cool looking art, which is also neat. And you get that as part of your participation effectively in these events. So check out your local stores. Ask your local store owner if they signed up for it or not. I believe there is still time that if they have the capability to stream the event in their store, they can still get signed up potentially. So I would check with them.
They seem like they've been doing a good job lately of, you know, having cards that are good and also with good art that they're doing for promos and things like that.
Yeah, it's encouraging to people, you know, and I'll be honest with you, I'm definitely going to hunt down a store to watch. I know of one in the area already. I'm going to try to check. There's another one closer to me that I'm going to ask them about it and see if they can get signed up or not. But I think it's cool. And this is another one of those things that success or failure, I'm not going to judge them one way or the other. I think it's cool that you are making the effort and at least putting it out there. Like they spent time getting set up so they can schedule them. They produce promos that they're sending out to people. It's a way to, again, get people to pay attention to the faces that you're putting up in this World Championship thing. And at least the mindset's in the right place, whether it works or not. So go participate. Go to a local store. Like, make it successful so people will try to do more of this stuff. Because that's part of it, right? Like, if they're going to spend the money and the time, and these local stores are going to clear their schedule so they can do a magic thing and whatever, you want it to be successful for people, so they're encouraged to do this type of stuff again. Whether it's identical or it's something new, or maybe when we get to the end of the year, there's some cool commander thing they can do or whatever. Like, we need to at least support the positive efforts. Because, like, we're all going to whine and complain when stuff's bad, right? We're all going to do it.
Yes, we are.
But when stuff is good, we also have to support it to encourage people to do the good thing too that we want. But anyway, that's my PSA on that. Go to your local stores, see if they're going to have one of these World Championship viewing parties, and get your hands on a really cool Crucible of Worlds foil card. Now, with all that being said, I think it's time.
Time to rattle some dishes.
It's time for us to get the dishes out for some dinner table talk. So where this comes from this week is, you know, we told you all about the stream we did about things we learned and whatnot during this whole 60-day thing. And one of the people, and I believe he's from out of the U.S., he asked, it actually, because it was around the, it was actually, I believe, when the Kobe news had come out. And he was talking about, like, even though he is not black, he is a big supporter of Kobe, and he looked up to him, whatever. And, you know, also not being an American, all that. And he was wondering why diversity is always such a big deal and why every single person has to be represented in everything. And he and to be fair, he presented it in a very nice way and even said, hey, look, I'm not trying to start a fight. I'm just curious about perspective, whatever. And what I tried to explain to him is that there are, I guarantee you somewhere, especially in Boston, there's probably some black guy that was good at shooting set shot three-pointers who idolized Larry Bird, right? That doesn't mean that it was bad Larry Bird existed or that some black guy wasn't shooting three-pointers. But if there were only a bunch of white people playing basketball, the NBA would not be what it is today, right? Like, you wouldn't have.
And that was the case back in, what, the 30s or 40s?
Sure. And
there's a great Saturday Night Live sketch where Michael Jordan plays, I think it's the first black member of the Harlem Globetrotters. So you definitely go look that up if you haven't seen that one.
But I also, you know, want to say, like, when the NBA got Yao Ming, the sport of basketball in China blew up.
Absolutely.
When they started bringing more foreign players in, you know, like, good examples, like when you got Dirk, now all of a sudden the sport of basketball has a higher profile in Germany and Belgium or whatever, and you start looking at more players there. So having that diversity allows you to reach other markets, allows you to get a bigger draw. Because as a company, whether people like it or not, your goal is to get more people participate in your product, ultimately spend more money. The ways you do that are to make yourself accessible to more of these people. And I would even say it goes further than that because, you know, we talked about this a little bit off the air. By the way, if you're a patron, you have a cool little gift coming. We're actually going to start recording some of our off the air stuff and putting it up just for our patrons. So those of you that already are supporting us, you will have access to this content. But one of the things we talked about was, you know, let's say you're doing a show about some group in Texas, right? And you want to, at some point, you're going to have some story or some narrative about either local jobs or businesses or politics or whatever. To not have Hispanic people represented in your cast while you're trying to tell that story would just be incomplete, right? You're not going to have the person, the writers, whatever, telling that angle of the story. Or you're going to be forcing people who aren't familiar with that perspective or that feeling to have to step into that role to try to portray it as best they can. And it's just not going to be as authentic. So you're cutting yourself off from being able to even tell your best possible narrative by those other things not existing.
And yeah, as we talked about earlier, Hollywood's been phenomenally good at that, at cutting the perspectives off, not at representing them all.
Well, you know, to kind of bring the whole show full circle, you know, doing our callback here. But when we talk about Friends, and there's those days where I was literally just like, you know, sure, you're in New York, but like New York of all cities has a lot of different cultures there.
It's alternate universe New York.
Yeah, and they just weren't represented, right? And conversely, and I'll say this, it's not like I've watched a ton of it, but I've seen a few episodes of Grey's Anatomy, right? Based in the Seattle area, there are a fair amount of Asian people there. There are fairly large pockets of Asian community in Seattle. When you see people at their hospital, or you see the staff at the hospital, there are black people, there are white people, there are Indians, there are whatever. Like, it looks like it should look. You know what I mean? And more people of a more diverse racial background apparently watch that show.
Funny how that works, right?
Yeah. So it's not even about just saying, well, everybody needs to be visual and present and blah, blah, blah. Like, yeah, that's nice, but it's more than tokenism. Like, I don't want a story where, I don't know, Theros has like the one black guy who happens to be in charge of some area or whatever. And it's literally just like, well, he's like everybody else. He's just black. Like, well, okay. But if you're going to do a full character like Kaya, where you're saying, okay, we're going to write this whole backstory, we're going to do this whole thing, you know, you're going to bring in a black female writer or whatever and a consultant, and you're going to talk about her hairstyle and all this stuff. Okay, cool. Now you're making a character that has a story purpose and then also visually appeals to somebody that they go, okay, that is somebody I can relate to. That's somebody that looks like me. And then now it's a draw because it has that other depth to it. It's not just, well, we wanted to be a black character, so we made a black woman a planeswalker.
And people can tell the difference, you know, when you've put some work into it, or when you're just kind of like, all right, quick, this character was probably white in the preset, but we realized how bad it was, quickly make them black or Asian or whatever.
Well, here's the thing, and I'm going to apologize to my friend David. So I'm going to try not to spoil it. So I'm not going to talk about the particular product or anything. But this was, I believe, 2 weekends ago. We're out and about. Where I think we're doing... Oh, we were going to, like a snake and reptile fair, because my wife was looking at animals. And on the way back, I get a message from my friend Dave. And he says, hey, I'm working on this game, and I have these different characters. And the artwork's sweet, by the way. Like, he's done a lot of stuff, but he's doing his research, and he wants to have a diverse set of characters. And he has like one that's like Asian, and you know, he's got a couple of black characters and whatever. And it's like, okay, cool, good job. I'm like, awesome. And he's kind of checking in with some different people and, you know, just doing the smart thing, right? I'm gonna do this thing, but like, I don't want to have like stereotypical hair or whatever if it doesn't make sense, and you know, all that. And one of the things that came up is he was concerned because he didn't want somebody to see a black barbarian character and take it the wrong way, that that character had a lower intelligence score than some of the other characters. That was a tough one, because I'm like, well, that's a barbarian character, right? You know? But at the same time, it was like, yeah, I do understand your concern, though. Being a white guy who's making this game and like doing this thing, like, I get it. Like, that, it can just look bad to the wrong person. Now, here's the amusing part of it. Is that as I went through his characters and I'm like, you know, giving him the green light, like, this is cool, this is cool, this is cool. We actually had to change the barbarian and make another character black in exchange for that one, because he had another character that was black that happened to be the rogue.
Oh yes. You're the
see where I'm going with this, right?
Yeah. Like,
in and of itself is not bad, right? But if you're concerned about people saying something, you would then now have like effectively the thief,
yep,
and the character with the lower intelligence being the black characters, right? Like, it's a little bit of a bad look. Now, in general, I don't think he intended it that way at all. I mean, I've known Dave for years. I don't think
those are the classes, you know, like wizard, thief, barbarian.
Yeah, that's just what they are, right? And he was so, you know, he immediately went, oh shit, you're right, you know, let's not do that. So he made a clean swap. The black character is now the, we left the rogue because the art's like beautiful on it and it's awesome. So they swapped him out, and they had the artist go to town to work on new barbarian, new bard, actually. And the bard is now black. And a fun thing, I am now a bard in the game.
Okay.
That's so pretty awesome. That was not anything I knew was going to happen. He's just like, hey, I'm thinking about just making you the character in the game. And I'm like, well, that actually seems fine, right? Like, I don't mind. And if anything, if somebody wants to complain about it, I could be like, hey, I'm the dude and I gave it the green light. Like, it's fine.
Yep.
You know? But anyway, like, even in that type of situation, though, he was pushing particularly to not just have tokenism. He didn't want just like to be this one race here, one race here, one race here. And then, you know, just be like five different color people just because. Like, he at least wants the characters to look right and the characters to make sense within the context of his game and also happen to be of these different cultures.
And it's great that he noticed that, because if we're honest, the way thieves are portrayed in fantasy literature is not the way thieves are portrayed everywhere else.
Oh, very true. That's absolutely
thieves
true.
In fantasy tend to be like, you know, Gambit from the X-Men. They're handsome, they're charming. Even the people they're stealing from seem to love them. Where if you see a thief, say, on Law and Order, nah, that's not generally how they're portrayed. Especially if they're of a different ethnicity.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
I keep thinking about a Huggy Bear from Starsky and Hutch.
Yeah, there you go. But again, even to that level, what he was doing, like, he understood. He's like, I don't want anybody to feel excluded from the game. I want everybody to be able to find something interesting. I want this to all make sense because, you know, kids may be playing it or whatever. And he understands. Like, he's trying to build the best game for the most number of people and build future gamers, right? And he was doing his checks with three or four of his friends that are of different backgrounds. He was just like, hey, are you okay with this? Does this make sense? And that's the stuff I think you have to do to say, okay, does this narrative I'm trying to tell, does this visual picture I'm trying to create, like, does it make sense? Or does it look like I just painted the skin this color just so I can say there's a black character? And, you know, and a good example is, like, they started out, like, the artist went back and he was, you know, trying to leave most of the same costume or whatever and the hat and everything. Because, you know, the bards in fantasy are all done up different ways depending on how you portray them. This one particularly has, like, his lute on his back and, you know, he's got fancy gloves and boots and all this stuff. We went back and forth a little bit and we're like, well, it looks kind of cool and it makes sense. But, like, now the hat's not going to fit right because the hair is different and blah, blah. And he's like, you know what? I'm just going to redesign a bunch of this. Just so visually, it doesn't look like we just shoved a character in there just to say it's there. It's like, no, this look, this hat, this everything fits this particular person. And to me, that was a big step. I think that's awesome to see it done.
I can't wait to see your hat now.
Yeah. Also, let me say this too. To anybody who's listening who may be making a game or product, I guess, if you're going to include racial diversity, just do it right out of the box. I can't recall right off the top of my head, but I know I've seen in the past where they've had stuff on Kickstarter and one of the levels or stretch goals or whatever has been a new character that happens to be different. Now, usually they have other skills or bonuses or abilities or whatever, or some special cards or whatever, but, like, that's kind of where you add the diversity in. And that's just the wrong way to do it. Like, because you're telling me at that point, well, I want to include you, but I kind of only can if we raise, I don't know, $1,000 over the goal. When in reality, it's like, you could have just swapped any two other things and just made the other thing the stretch goal.
You want me to pay for diversity now, is what you're
saying. Yeah. Like, let's not do that. I can't think of one recently. So, I mean, I think people have gotten better about it. But, like, just a thing. If it comes up, just double check yourself.
And an example from the video game world. If you're going to put, you know, if you're going to put characters of a certain ethnicity in your game, actually hire actors of that background. Just FYI.
Oh, that's a weird one. I hadn't even thought about that. Yeah.
Because that happened with Wargroove, and they were trying to be diverse, but used white actors for black characters. Like, oh, we know what you were trying to do, and it went backwards.
That's such a weird one, because you could just probably find any random person to just fill in your role and just give them, like, $500 and put them in a booth for 2 days. That's weird. Like, why would you, like... Okay. I mean,
you just I wouldn't work it with them. I don't know what the thought process was, but and once it was pointed out to them, they're like, oh yeah, we really screwed that up, and they addressed it. But you know,
and I get it. That like I'm more aware of some of these issues because of obviously the projects we have. But even here, where there's different game studios and whatever, if somebody were to come up to me and be like, hey, we need you to do some voice acting for something, you down for it, whatever, we'll pay you this much. I'm like, cool. And then you tell me that I'm reading for like a white character or a Hispanic character, I'd be like, why? You know what I mean? Like, that would be such a weird feeling to me to know that like my voice is going to be coming out of a character that's nothing like me. That would be so weird.
Oh yeah, we also want you to do an accent. Could you do?
Yeah, see, that's where I'd be like, no, I for real can't do this now.
If you make him sound like Carlos Mencia, would that be a problem?
Yeah, that's rough. But yeah, just some stuff to think about there. You know, I think it's not about just having people be seen. Like that's like the most surface level part of it. It's really about giving everybody more things they can latch onto, being able to extend your brands, making characters that count and matter. You know, all of that is part of it. So down the road, there can be more people that viewers, fans, listeners, whatever, identify with, that they're willing to purchase your jerseys or your games or whatever because there's things they relate to. That the stories they grew up with have a meaning and are relevant to that particular narrative you're trying to tell. Because I get it, right? When you are a young white guy and you've grown up with every story, I say every, the majority, the large majority of the stories being things that make sense to you, are funny to you, you know, the events and stories that have happened in your life are relevant to the thing you're viewing. Like all that makes sense and it feels normal. But then the people who haven't gotten it, I asked them, okay, well, try watching a movie that's not written specifically for you. You know, watch something that talks about Black history or something that talks about, you know, a Chinese family trying to get citizenship in the US or, I don't know, immigration stuff from Mexico, or even just a story that has, you know, try watching a show like, what's that show on Fox that's got, not Power, because that's 50 Cent's show.
Empire,
there you go. Like, try watching something like that, where there are fewer white characters. Try to see how, like, okay, when things don't totally relate to you, or don't totally make sense for you, how different that experience feels. And then imagine if realistically 90% of the things you were going to engage with, whether it's books, music, movies, television, whatever, now all felt like that. Like that's the difference. If you were watching, I don't know, Boys in the Hood, and there's just one white character, and they're literally not even relevant to the story. They're just there so they can say they have a white character. That would feel a little weird to you, right?
Sup, Biff?
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Hello there, friends.
That's kind of what it's like, right? It's not about just being seen. It's about having all of these things make sense and the narrative and the connection and the stories and, you know, future branding and whatever. Like, all of this stuff is part of it. We're getting there. Don't get me wrong. Like that, I've definitely seen changes. You know, even like I said, just even as simple as a game that's coming out, a tabletop game, the creators are still like reaching out, going like, "Hey, we don't want to be like everybody else. We want there to be better visuals on this thing, and we want people to be able to see themselves." And you know, I was like, "Dude, this is kind of cool because you don't see that many colored fantasy characters." I mean, you just don't. I mean, we've all watched Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
It's just not a thing that happens. And I'll say this for Wizards' credit. Like, since third edition, that is one of the things I thought they did a pretty good job with. Like, you see more skin tones across more characters, races, and classes now. And that was pretty cool. So at least, you know, give them a shout out for that.
And also not just diversity, you know, of appearance or skin color, but remembering that there's diverse viewpoints. Like, you know, as Daquan and I say all the time, we cannot speak for the entire Black delegation.
Yep, we are not a monolith, for sure.
A Black person that grew up in New York is going to have a completely different life experience than what I had growing up in Louisiana.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. Absolutely
different.
They're
going to bring an entirely different perspective.
Oh, for sure. For sure. I mean, and that goes for every race, every culture, whatever. Like, not one thing fits everybody. And that's why I think you have to get those people from those different backgrounds, from the different parts of the country or the world or whatever, to tell that narrative, to tell that story, to bring a different perspective even to that character. Right? Like, I imagine there are multiple times where a director probably went, okay, here's this idea, get with the writer. They write up this character, and then you're like, okay, and it's a Black character, it's from this thing, and then you get a Black actor in there, and then they put a whole different spin on it, and you're like, whoa, I didn't even know that was a thing. Hell,
yeah,
I shouldn't even be laughing at this, but there's a video. I shared it on, anybody who follows me on Twitter can see it. I think I shared it yesterday. There is a video of some guys from Baltimore, and they put together like a statement. My wife had found it and shared it with me, and I thought it was hilarious. But I'm trying to remember what the statement was, but it's something like Aaron earned an iron urn. But yeah, you see where this is going, right? But because of the Baltimore accent, yeah, and the dudes are trying to say it, like almost every word sounds the same in that statement. But that's even something like that, though, like that different dialect from different areas can change how a character is portrayed.
Yeah,
it brings a different perspective with it. You know, that you're just not getting if you don't include these different people. But yeah, overall, you know, I just kind of wanted to dive in a little bit deeper on that kind of question. If you just know, why is it a big deal for more people to be represented? You know, I think as long as it's not just the tokenism of just having the person there, but it's actually true representation, I think it has a lot of benefits and a lot of connotations. Cool. So let's just end it there this week. And why don't you tell everybody where they can find you, Brian?
I am DL Caesar on Twitter, Twitch, and YouTube. And I also have a family channel, Alan's Ever After, that's on YouTube. So check us out.
And I am Power Dragon, PowerDragon. You can find me mostly on Twitch and YouTube these days, but also on Twitter and almost any other social platform. So come hang out. We have a lot of cool stuff that are happening over on my YouTube page. By the way, come over and smash the subscribe button and give me a like over there. That helps a bunch. But I think that's going to do it for us. So whenever you're listening, wherever you are listening from, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and good night. If you have a chance, please check us out on Patreon at patreon.com/colorofmagic. You can also find us on Facebook at Color of Magic. We're also over on Twitter and Twitch at ColorOfMTG. And we have a website you can check out, colorofmtg.com. Please share our episode with your friends and help us grow our base. As always, every little bit helps, and we appreciate your support.